I have on the line Dr. Caroline Finkel. Welcome to our program, Dr. Finkel.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be with you.
Tell us about what you do and where you live.
I'm an Ottoman historian and I live in Istanbul. We've been here for over 20 years now.
So you have recently been riding 6 weeks across Anatolia. What on earth were you doing?
Well might you ask. I am a historian who usually sits in the library, like a lot of historians, writing history from documents. And with some friends and colleagues, we decided that we wanted to relive history where it was made. You could call it history by other means. And so we decided to follow on horseback the early stages of the final journey of the great Turkish Ottoman traveler, Evliya Çelebi, across northwestern Turkey.
Who was Evliya Çelebi?
Evliya Çelebi was a courtier of the Ottoman Sultan in Istanbul, but uniquely, he traveled all over the Ottoman Empire and beyond for about 40 years. He went from Vienna to Mecca. He went from Sudan to Muscovite state. You know, he deserves to be more famous, really, than Marco Polo, whom everybody knows. And he left us a travel account that's the longest and fullest in world literature. Unfortunately, rather little known, but we're trying to remedy this.
Let's spell for our listeners Evliya Çelebi. EvliyaCelebi. So where was he going on this occasion, the route that you were following, basically?
The route we were following was a route that he took in 1671, and he was going then as far, in fact, as he went on any of his other journeys. He was taking the chance later in his life to do the Muslim pilgrimage to Mecca, and we decided that because the early stages of this journey were in northwest Anatolia, northwest Turkey, this is the route that we would follow.
Interesting. Can you describe the travel account he wrote?
Yes, he wrote a 10-volume travel account, and these are 10 large volumes of manuscript. Unfortunately, very little of this has been translated into English, so therefore it's, although a lot of people know his name, they have no access to his works, or very little access to his works. And only recently, in fact, has there been published a proper transcription of his work into modern letters. Not into the modern Turkish language as such, because the Turkish language has undergone a lot of change in the last years, but at least into a text that scholars can work with. And it's a quite wonderful travel account. It's very informative, it's very humorous, it's entertaining, it's descriptive of his both of places he visited and of experiences. It's certainly the equal in its character as well as in its length of any other travel literature in the world.
So you said that you were in northwest and western Anatolia. Where exactly did you go and how far?
We couldn't unfortunately start in Istanbul where he began because of the traffic, the building and so on. So we started a little outside the city and we followed his route as closely as we could, snaking down through northwest Turkey, going southerly. The trouble was that he, of course, as I said before, he was going to Mecca, but he certainly didn't go in a straight line, which would have meant going southeast from Istanbul. He wiggled around all over the place. We did that. These were places he had not visited before, even though he had traveled so widely. We left him at a certain point. We obviously couldn't, unfortunately, continue all the way. We traveled probably about 1,300 kilometers.
And that's about, what, 800 miles or so?
Is that what it is? Yes, something like that, about 800 miles.
What was the purpose of the trip, apart from your wish to see where history was made?
We wanted to, there's a word for it now, reenactment, to reenact his route. Evliya himself, with the people he was with when he went, and as all travellers in past times, went on horseback. And things look very different from horseback. You're going slowly, your interaction with people is very different, your ability to see places that he visited or that historical places along the way is very different from going in a car. On a horse, you can go anywhere. Another purpose was to, Turkey has a very rich equestrian horse past. And of course, when the tractor came, this began to be displaced and it's very much disappearing. So we wanted to look at the villagers, the connection that villagers still have with this former world of horses, with the working horses, the horses they had for pleasure to ride to their fields and so on. And there are two sports in Turkey which may have other comparable sports elsewhere, but the very Turkish versions, one is called jirit, where a sort of javelin is thrown by horsemen galloping very fast down a course across a sort of playing field. And the other one is Rafan, which is pacing races where riders, unlike in the States where they also have pacing races, they actually ride on the horses. So we wanted to draw attention, people's attention to that. Thirdly, we wanted to encourage the preservation of the region's natural and historical landscapes and the unique cultural environment there. Again, of course, by going slowly, we could hope that there would be a sustainable tourism angle to our project, both to bring some prosperity to the villages by people who would walk through the villages, ride through the villages. This has happened elsewhere in Turkey. There are two particular routes where people walk and stay in village houses. So this brings some income to these rather poor, very now poor villages. And basically to reintroduce the local people and children who've never seen a horse to their history and to the possibilities, you know, of another angle of life in the country where most people leave the country and countryside and go to the towns. The children were extraordinarily interested. We put them on the horses. They rode around. They loved it. And as historians, we want to foster a sense of history by recording the stories of the villagers who used to keep horses and who depended on them, indeed, for their livelihood. So we also want to, you know, have an oral history angle to our project.
Tell me about the route and the horses.
Well, we went on very varied terrains, of course. We went, things were different in the old days. We tried to go where Evliya Çelebi had gone. We couldn't go into the cities, of course, right to the heart of them, though on a couple of occasions we did. So we went through cities, we went through many villages, handing out information along the way, talking to the villagers and so on. We went along riverbeds, we went up mountainsides and down them again, of course, sometimes having to lead the horses. The landscapes everywhere were completely stunning. I mean, it's not only people outside Turkey who don't know the Turkish countryside. Many of the people who live in Istanbul and in Izmir and Ankara, the big cities of Istanbul, have no idea of the beauty of what's just very close to where they live. So the landscapes was something that was quite wonderful. The villagers were all curious, kind, generous. They brought us, it was harvest time, and they brought us their produce and so on. They all know Evliya Çelebi because they learnt about him at school. And they were intrigued at what we were doing. One of the other quite wonderful things about riding in Turkey is that there are no fences. There are no walls. You can go across people's property, respectfully, of course, and no one complains. They're just delighted to see you there on horseback. You certainly can't do this in Europe, which I know and I hear from friends in the States either, where the notion of private property has taken a grip and everything is contained by more or less high barriers to keep you out. And when it comes to the horses we rode were incredibly courageous and resourceful. We had seven horses. We were usually six people. We had one extra horse, just in case. The horses were a sort of mixture of Arabian and a more local Anatolian Turkish sort of a horse. And so they were quite short, not so high, maybe 15 hands, 14 hands. And they stayed out in all weathers. They grazed a lot on grass. They were horses that were used to being outside, not horses that lived their lives in stables, or that sort of a horse would never have survived.
Interesting. Where did you get these horses?
These horses came from one of our participants, a Turkish horseman called Ercihan Dilari, who has a horse riding establishment in Cappadocia, which is the land, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, the land of the fairy chimneys, right in the center of Turkey. He has a riding school there with perhaps 30 horses. We met him last year through friends, and being the crazy guy he is, he agreed to come along with us and even to bring his horses. Now, I don't think many people would have done that. So we're extraordinarily grateful that we found such a, what we call in Turkish, a deli, a mad, crazy guy who could live our dream with us.
Who else was crazy enough to join you?
Well, there were two academic friends from England, Donna Landry and Gerald McLean, who are professors. So that was the four of us, the core group. And then we had two friends from America. Some other people joined us along the way for shorter periods. Some friends, a couple of friends from England, Turkish friends came, you know, for shorter times. There's a horse vet friend of ours here who hadn't ridden for a very long time, but she came to see us, Ayşe Yetiş, and she rode even though she hadn't rode for years. Like me, I hadn't ridden for 40 years either, which just shows anyone can do it. So various people came and went. We picked up one or two people in villages who, seeing we had an empty horse, said, can I come along? And they did. So it was, you know, a changing group.
What was the age range of the participants?
Well, most of us were in our 50s, not very photogenic, perhaps, but anyway, there we were. We had the wife of a former British ambassador in Turkey, who's 71 and a wonderful horsewoman.
Wow.
Young people, well, we put these tiny kids on and led them round, but essentially we were, you know, pretty middle-aged group.
I see. Any problems?
Well, no problems really that were serious. None of the problems that before we set off, people warned us against, you know, saddle sores, and stiffness and falling off and all sorts of horrors. No, our problems were rather different. On several occasions, well, perhaps three or four occasions, the horses ran away at night. One of them was not ever tied up because they were mares, incidentally, our horses. We used mares, though most people in Turkey ride stallions. But anyway, one of our mares led a couple of other loose horses away. And on a couple of times, we had a terrible time trying to get them back. That was one of our problems. Another was that we got lost once on top of a mountain at 1,400 meters, which is 4,200 feet, perhaps, as it was getting dark, and we were saved by the local forestry fire lookout people. That was quite dramatic. Otherwise, there were sort of prevalent problems, villagers not being used to seeing groups of people going through and continuing on the route, suspected us of being treasure hunters. That's quite a normal charge in Turkey, where people are always digging in ancient ruins if they can to find lost gold. But also, which amused us most, was that we were suspected of being sheep rustlers. And the idea was that we were stealing sheep and carrying them along in our van, which actually was full of all our clothes and saddles and feed for the horses, of course. So these weren't problems in any real sense. They just added to the general amusement and hilarity of our wonderful trip.
Will we be able to share your experiences?
We certainly hope so. We, having set out on this sort of Evliya Çelebi commemoration ride, we discovered that in our absence, UNESCO, that's the Educational, Social, Cultural Organization of the United Nations, no less, has proclaimed 2011 as the year of Evliya Çelebi. Now, he was born in 1611, so this occasion marks the 400th anniversary of his birth. We couldn't have hoped for such good news because we've already started to prepare some projects within that framework. First of all, we'll be writing a guide to the route that we followed and that he followed, comparing the two experiences, his and ours. It'll have a GPS route so you can ride it, you can walk it. We've also got a documentary film in production in Istanbul. We, as I mentioned before, the oral history. We hope to have a book of oral history of interviews with local horse people along our route. To meet our sustainable tourism angle, we've suggested part of the route to an American horse travel company who we hope will bring their customers there, as they do to already to our horseman in Cappadocia, to his ranch. They already bring American customers to his ranch where they ride for 10 days or whatever and camp. And we hope that they'll now be able to ride on our route as an alternative. And I'm sure there'll be many other things that we'll dream up so that everyone can share and enjoy some part of what we have.
How did you fund the project?
We were very lucky. Finance, of course, was a big problem. I mean, you have to feed the horses. We have to feed ourselves. There's a lot of expenses. We were very lucky because Evliya Çelebi, born in Istanbul, but his family comes from a city in west central Turkey, which we went through and stayed in, called Kutahya, which I'll just spell it because it's a very beautiful and very historical city. It's spelled Kutahya. So the authorities there, the mayor and the governor, were extremely helpful to us, and we raised most of our money from companies in that city. So we hope that, you know, the tourism there will, with this extra benefit of Evliya Çelebi's magic, will be helped there. We also got some in-kind support. There's a Turkish jockey club. They supported us. We got support from a feed company that supplies the feed to the racehorses, the racecourse in Istanbul, called Zeytinoğlu Yem. We were supported also by Avis. Our support vehicle came from them. The companies in Kutahya were... The big industry there is pottery and porcelain, and local companies, Kutahya Porcelain, Gural Porcelain, and so on, were the ones that supported us. We're very grateful to them all. Of course, now we're looking for support for our future projects. And now that UNESCO has declared 2011 the year of Evliya Çelebi. We hope that we will be lucky in finding further support so that we can make his name known to the outside world adequately and as he deserves.
Well, for your next ride in Anatolia, make room for some of our listeners as well.
Well, I certainly hope we will. We intend to do another ride, in fact, in 2011. We have yet to decide exactly where it will be, but this one was such fun. And as well as having a serious purpose, as well as I told you all the serious things we're doing, but it was just such fun and such a wonderful experience that I hope that many people will be able to do something similar.
Thank you for sharing your experiences with us.